Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to I Do Movies Badly, a podcast exploration of my cinematic ignorance. I am your host, Jim Rohner, and despite being an amateur film critic since 2006, I am woefully ignorant of many films, filmmakers, and genres that consensus has deemed important, and thus I have created this podcast to document my journey into cinematic edification. This month I'm exploring the films of Paul Verhoeven as recommended by Matt Bradley Shurgi, and this week's episode I'll be talking about his 1997 film Starship Troopers. And I'm going to apologize ahead of time, this might be a bit of a rough episode. Similarly to the, I guess it was last week's episode when there were some delays, I've been busy, I have been tired, I have been stressed. I didn't even really have any time to assemble notes for this episode, but I also didn't want to delay any further. I'm a creature of habit, I'm a man of routine, and I don't like putting it off, and I certainly don't like lapsing on commitments that I have made, especially when it's a commitment that I've been doing for the last, I don't know, 2.5 years, I guess. So I wanted to get this episode out tonight because I also, this was sort of the only time that I could really get it out in terms of how my week is developing because I have things going on, and I just knew that I had to kind of get it out as soon as I possibly could. But I may not be as prepared as usual, and maybe you can also just tell by the sound of my voice that I'm also a little bit more weary than I usually am. Not anything bad, but just life happens sometimes, and we can only get as much sleep as our body will let us get. So, getting into Starship Troopers and then obviously wrapping up Paul Verhoeven month and the month of April with this, this one was the one that I felt the most pressure in regards to what I would be able to derive from the movie and also what I would be able to say about it. Because of all these Paul Verhoeven films, this one, maybe RoboCop would be arguably the best. Well, yeah, I'd say probably, with the exception of maybe RoboCop, this one would be the one that I think people would sort of point to as sort of the quintessential Paul Verhoeven film, sort of the pinnacle of his style, of his oeuvre. Is that how you pronounce that word? I think I've said this before on this podcast before. And just like what it is to make a Paul Verhoeven film, like look no further than Starship Troopers. You know, maybe someone would say RoboCop. Maybe Julius, who is a person who was commenting on the introduction to your episode, which we'll get into a little bit. He would probably say he or she, actually, now that I just thought about it. I don't mean to assume gender just based on a name. Would say Showgirls. Probably the only person on this earth who might say Showgirls. But it sort of seemed like, so, you know, Starship Troopers is sort of like, the consensus is sort of, this is the Paul Verhoeven film. And when it comes to, you know, so I kind of felt a similar, or put a bit of pressure on me, similar to like, you know, even maybe Bridge on the River Kwai or Persona, in the sense of like, this is a movie that a lot of people have had a lot of thoughts about. And certainly the opinion of it has sort of swung in the opposite direction based on it, because when it first came out, it didn't do very well at all financially. It did not do well, and or did it? I just realized I don't really know. I think I'm pretty sure that Starship Troopers did not do very well, and also critically it did not do very well either. But yet there has been a sort of a shift in momentum over the last 20 or so years, in which people, it has been 20 years, hasn't it? There's been a kind of a shift in the opinion and the consensus on the opinion, in the sense of now people kind of look upon Starship Troopers very fondly and as, if not a very good film, then perhaps even a great film, a great kind of piece of satire when it comes to the nature of human beings and sort of the military industry complex. Not specific to one country or another, but just sort of, you know, the world and how people are driven, or what drives them, and especially when it comes to an enemy, a faceless, ominous, not ominous, a faceless, anonymous enemy that is being fought. So knowing that, I was like, how am I going to approach this? Because this is probably one of these films that I'm not going to be able to add anything really to the conversation other than just kind of saying what everybody else has said, but sort of in my own voice. And yet, even before I watched the movie, was just kind of looking over the backlog of I Do Movies Badly episodes on Battleship Retention. Once again, stressed, tired. This is going to be a rough one, folks. Because I like to, you know, kind of browse through there and just kind of see if there are any new comments or are there any listeners, kind of what is the conversation going on, and sort of saw that there was a conversation that was taking place in the comment field of the introductory episode to Paul Verhoeven, kind of primarily made up of four players that only kind of was kind of whittled down to two. And I'll get into this a little bit later, but the general premise behind being like, the question that was being raised, like, is Starship Troopers actually, or was it actually intended to be satire, or has the story sort of been retconned by many people, including Paul Verhoeven, to kind of say like, oh, well, this movie wasn't received like it was intended to be received, so let's actually say that it was supposed to be this whole thing the entire time. You know, let's say that this thing it's become, that's what it was supposed to be the entire time. And it's not a great equivalent to make in the sense of this movie, I'm going to say, is very bad. But is this sort of like a situation like The Room? With Tommy Wiseau, in which Tommy Wiseau, despite what you may hear him say in, you know, the last few years, The Room was a movie that was intended to be a very serious drama, and it failed miserably because it is terrible. And people kind of embraced it to be this so bad it's good cult phenomenon, so much so to that Tommy Wiseau has sort of tried to retcon the story and say instead, no, this was always a comedy. This was always something funny that I was trying to make that you could be in on the joke with it, which if you've seen his pilot for Neighbors, which is a TV show that has failed to be picked up by any network and or streaming service, you can categorically say that that is false, because what results from what he tried to make with The Room and what he intentionally made with Neighbors is just there is quite clearly a tonal difference between the two. So, not to delve too much into The Room, but so it does raise that question of is that what happened with Starship Troopers? And so I thought, well, to make this episode, maybe I'll dive down, you know, maybe I'll dive down that rabbit hole and kind of maybe play the devil's advocate in a little bit, or maybe even the contrarian critic, and sort of let me really explore this avenue of Starship Troopers not intending to be satire. Maybe this was supposed to be a serious drama, and this was always supposed to be a movie that we were supposed to take seriously. I just said supposed a lot of too many times in close proximity to each other, but and maybe that's the angle that I can go with, and maybe that's going to add a fresh voice to the conversation. And yet, but then the more I started kind of doing research and exploring it and going down that didn't really seem like the way to go. But I think what I've kind of settled on, which is actually the way that this conversation on the message board started, was somewhere in between the two things. Like, yes, it is a satire, but perhaps not an entirely successful one, because there are things about it which are not very good. And that's where I think I've kind of ultimately settled on. And I think in order to kind of, you know, kick off this episode is just to start on those things which everybody is already kind of aware of, which the supporters will cite, and which, you know, is kind of obvious about Starship Troopers, in which, in at least in regards to the idea of, yes, this was always intended to be a satire, here are some of the points that, you know, or here are some of the things that we can point to. But then, so, you know, you obviously have things like, if you're going to make a serious movie, why would you ever cast Denise Richards as one of your leads? Why would you ever cast Casper Van Dien as one of your leads? Why would you ever cast Jake Busey in anything, I guess, is a larger question. But if you're going to make a movie which is going to be very serious and that is going and that's supposed to be emotional and dramatic, you know, then these are the first three huge waving red flags. Like, whoa, this is a problem here, because you should never be casting Casper Van Dien. You should never be casting Denise Richards if you're trying to make a serious drama. And I remember when I first saw this movie, this was like in high school maybe, I'm just like, wow, this movie sucks. Like, Casper Van Dien sucks, and Denise Richards somehow manages to suck even more than Casper Van Dien does, and a lot of the supporting characters are very hammy, and it's just like, I don't, you know, Neil Patrick Harris would eventually become a lot more famous for doing that with the Barney Stinson character in How I Met Your Mother, which is a show and a character that I love. So that, it works for him, but for everyone else, just like, what is going on here? This just, like, this seems absolutely ridiculous. Now, as a high school student, thinking and interpreting this film as something which is supposed to be serious, it obviously doesn't work. It fails miserably right from the get-go because of the leads of this movie. But then, you know, later on, I kind of feel, like, enlightened because I'm like, oh, no, it's satire. So, of course, everything is supposed to be intentional. Everything is perfect. Everything is brilliant. And so when you kind of think of these leads as satirical, as this idea of that there's, like, yes, there's diversity amongst the cast and amongst the characters, but there was a sameness in the sense of they all are very vapid, they're all very attractive, they're all very handsome, very pretty, but there is nothing to these characters, and just sort of that idea of what this, what fascism really does to people, or the kind of people that respond to fascism are these ones that don't really have a mind, or at least a sense of sort of discernment and of thinking outside the box. And so you have everyone which sort of plays along, that essentially one character is the next character is the next character. These are all basically the same people that are just, for the narrative's sake, incredibly uninteresting, because they have to be uninteresting because they are basically just gears inside of this machine, which is this gigantic war machine which is marching forward, kind of trying to prove things, as we kind of see in the figure of the Michael Ironside character, that that military might, that violence, that force, that is the ultimate signifier of not just power, but also what is right and wrong. And, of course, that also feeds into this idea that it has to be satire, because the Michael Ironside character, who lives by that law and that rule, also dies by that law and that rule. Having this mindset doesn't save his life. Having this mindset doesn't elevate him above anyone else. He suffers the same fate as any one of these mindless, milquetoast, anonymous grunts who just get thrown into the fray against these gigantic bugs, who are also, at the same time, a hive mind and very similar, and just sort of this faceless, anonymous enemy that they are fighting against. And so you sort of have these two groups of combatants that are just basically the same exact thing, and they're just killing each other from beginning to end, and there's just really no, well, I mean, at the end, of course, the human beings, the Galactic Federation prevails, but you do have, at least, you know, for 2 hours, you have this sense of just these things killing each other back and forth, and there's not really any ground being made. And of course, this has to be a film or a story that has some type of message about the futility and the mindlessness of this kind of fascist militaristic action. And of course, the costumes support that. I mean, one thing that I found absolutely fascinating about Starship Troopers was when we first meet these characters, not just the main characters, but when we first meet this group of recruits, when they're being sworn in, the camera is sort of sailing over this group of people who are raising their hands and giving their oaths of allegiance to the Federation, and the group of people is just filled with this motley mix of races and genders, and even their clothes are different colors, and everything sort of pops, and you get this sense of a motley, heterogeneous mix of people who are all coming together. And then once they are actual soldiers, their uniforms are all the exact same, like the cold metallic gray, and you can't tell one person from the next unless you're really close to them. And you see, sure, the Seth Gilliam character is black, and the Dina Meyers character, is it Dina Meyers? Let me just double check on that. Yeah, the Dina Meyer character is a female and a redhead, and so there are these differentiators, but from a distance, they're pretty much all the same thing. All they really are is bug meat, essentially. Being marched into war to kind of serve this larger militaristic purpose. And I found that contrast to be incredibly interesting. And of course, not just the similarity of the uniform, but also Verhoeven has been very intentional, not intentional, but Verhoeven has been very open about the fact that some of the uniforms, including some of the officer uniforms, I'm thinking specifically of Neil Patrick Harris's character's uniform, like especially near the end, is very heavily borrowing from the SS and the, you know, Nazi outfits and uniforms in World War II, which would of course make sense being the fact that Paul Verhoeven was born and raised in an environment where he would have been exposed to Nazi occupation and this idea of the war machine and fascism and what this ultimately leads to and how it creates nothing but victims both for the people that are involved and the people that are being oppressed and are made victims ultimately. And then you also just, and so you also have, and you do have also that this over-the-topness, is that a word? Over-the-topness? You do just have violence which is over the top, not just in the sense of how excessive it is, because sure, I guess it's a little bit excessive. This movie didn't strike me, even when I saw it when I was younger, this movie didn't strike me as like overly gory, overly bloody, certainly not on the to the extent that RoboCop is, but many people die and a lot of these deaths involve very horrific violent deaths of limbs being torn off and bodies being ripped or cut in half. But also just the sense of how absurd the violence is in its uselessness, basically. I found it very funny that in one of those, like, do you want to know more sections, we have the Neil Patrick Harris character who's kind of instructing people how to kill bugs and is sort of instructing them to go for the nerve center, and he shoots it in the nerve center, and after just a couple shots, it dies. And yet when it comes time to the heat of the moment, in the battle moments... when they're invading the bug planet, or when they're on a Fort Whiskey, or is it Whiskey Base? But when they are, pretty much any time that they are interacting in combat with bugs, it seems like, man, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of shots until just one bug is brought down, and it's almost kind of comical how long it takes for a group of 3, 4, 5, maybe more of these troopers actually take down one bug character. And you kind of just, it's so absurd. And you just kind of think like, if it takes them that long to take down one bug, what are they going to do with these armies, with these gigantic bugs? Like, how is this going to be a foe that they are going to overcome when they are so incredibly incompetent at what they do? Incompetent is probably the wrong word. It's not the fact that the soldiers are incompetent, the people are incompetent, but it does say something about the absurdity of this repetition the definition of madness is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And it seems like madness, where it's just these people are rushing into battle with their guns ablazing and just thinking they're going to trounce the enemy and easily kill the enemy, when it's just the same thing. It's just pumping hundreds of shots into something which just keeps on coming. And there's a ridiculousness and an absurdity to that, which I think has to feed into this idea that, like, of course this is satire about this militaristic fascist's approach to living, to life, to what it is to be mankind. And then, of course, you know, this is something I should have mentioned, but in the discussion of the Casper Van Dien and the Denise Richards character and how they're just, I guess they're supposed to be from South America because their city of Buenos Aires is destroyed, and Casper Van Dien and Denise Richards, despite their names, Denise Richards' character having the last name of Ibanez, I believe it is. I don't know. I'm sure I did not pronounce it properly. Ibanez. Neither of them, they don't look like they're anything but just the most Aryan Caucasian people you could possibly imagine. Now, Casper Van Dien apparently has a fun or an insightful or intriguing little backstory in which Argentina, it was some not exiles, but some Nazi soldiers and officers who managed to escape from Germany before, you know, the downfall of the Third Reich. They did manage to find, I don't want to say asylum, but they did. But many did flee to Argentina. And so Casper Van Dien has a little story in which, you know, he believes that, you know, his character was a descendant of those Nazis that fled to Argentina and escaped without being caught or tried or brought to justice, which is intriguing, but also that seems like it is a way for Casper Van Dien to make sense of his character, whereas Paul Verhoeven just kind of makes it just sort of feeds into this idea of what is the ideal human being? What does mankind and what does humanity look at as the ideal human being? And it's, well, it's this chiseled Caucasian, blue-eyed, you know, dirty blonde or brunette hair Caucasian person that is just perfect in every single way. And it doesn't matter where you come from. It could be Buenos Aires, it could be America, it could be anywhere. But like, this is the perfect person, and this perfect person, though they don't, should exist throughout the world. And really, what does it matter if they're from Buenos Aires, or if they're from New York City, or if they're from London, or if they're from Russia, or if they're from Tokyo, when they're just being combined into this galactic federation, this gigantic force, which all exists to serve the same purpose, in which, you know, a private can rise to the rank of lieutenant in a matter of days, because they are essentially just, you know, it's basically just a revolving door of people who are coming in and trying to fulfill this mission of, well, kill the enemy, kill, murder, death kind of a thing. Once again, kind of hinting back to the absurdity of having these kind of characters as your lead characters in a movie which is, you know, supposed to be quote-unquote taken seriously. And then, of course, there is just, like I said, and also this idea of, despite the fact that on the surface it seems to be glorifying this type of behavior, it seems to hold these characters in high regard and high esteem, despite the fact that they are soldiers who are basically just killing an enemy, which the movie seems to hint at, are only really hostile because their territory has been invaded. You know, it doesn't seem like they are the aggressors. They are the ones who are being reactionary. They were fine to just kind of sit on their planet and be bugs, but then the Galactic Federation kind of, you know, stuck their nose where it didn't belong, and so then all of a sudden it's like, well, now you get a war because you're invading our, you are endangering our way of life. Where was I going with this thought? I don't remember. So it seems like we're supposed to be rooting on these characters and kind of hoping that their mission to eradicate the bugs succeeds, you know, that it's and like these are, you know, Rico is supposed to be, you know, strong and admired because not only is he handsome, but he's very good at being a soldier and he's a very effective killing machine. And his girlfriend Denise Richards is supposed to be admired because she's a very talented pilot, you know, and you know, she's kind of a little bit crazy. And Michael Ironside's character is admired and respected because of how many lives he saved, but then also just because he is the embodiment and the voice of this military might, basically. And these are characters that are ostensibly our protagonists and the ones that we're supposed to be getting behind, and yet the movie likes to keep reminding us about the costs of an endless war, in the sense of the literal battle damage that is being shown, you know, here and here, and in minor supporting characters to kind of emphasize, like, hey, this stuff will change you irrevocably. And it sort of starts with the, once Johnny and Neil Patrick Harris and Denise Richards, I know I'm jumping back and forth between, like, character names and actor names, so I guess Johnny and, Carmen and Carl, that's where it is, once they kind of find out what departments they're going to be assigned in, and Rico, you know, comes up to the desk and he says that he's in infantry, and this guy behind the desk, like, shakes his hand and, like, you know, mobile infantry made me the man that I am today, and he's got a robotic arm and he's missing his legs, or the student, the teacher who is sort of, I guess, a biology teacher of some kind, who is instructing the class while Johnny and why do I keep forgetting her name? Carmen, while Johnny and Carmen are dissecting a bug, and she is blind and her eyes are gone, and you just got, it's all this stuff which exists in the background is kind of showing, like, hey, this war has irrevocably changed and affected people. I mean, Michael Ironside's character also is missing an arm. You know, he's this battle-hardened lieutenant who is missing an arm and ultimately loses his entire life. And there's just these little reminders here and there throughout the film of just like, hey, this stuff, there's no coming back from this, whether it's physically or whether it's emotionally. War and battle will change you in a way that you can never go back again. And it's not in your face about it, which I really appreciate. It's very subtle, you know, because it sort of plays into this a little bit, kind of like, weird, like, awkward, comedic, almost a little bit over-the-top kind of thing, which is like, oh, these are just these crazy motley characters who are in this background, when really it's just kind of like, no, these are victims. These are victims who have been forever changed by this never-ending, constantly chugging machine of war, which is kind of like pushing them forward, basically. So it seems very clear, obviously, that this is supposed to be a satire. But then, getting back to this, to what I mentioned at the top of the show, which is this discussion, which kind of started developing in the comment fields, which go to battleshipretention.com, go to the podcast drop-down menu, go to I Do Movies Badly, and then go to the introductory episode of Paul Verhoeven, and you'll kind of see how this conversation develops. And it essentially starts out with a podcast fan favorite, Fiction Isn't Real, kind of talking about how this, you know, how Starship Troopers is one of those things where it's you know, it's sort of become unpopular to attack Starship Troopers as a movie which, you know, maybe isn't very good, because what people bring up as like, oh, this isn't very good, kind of becomes overwhelmed or sort of overridden by defenders of the movie and fans of the movie by saying like, hey, all this bad stuff, that's all supposed to be on purpose. Like, this is all, it all feeds into this brilliant satire that Paul Verhoeven was trying to make. So like, yeah, sure, it's bad, but it's supposed to be bad on purpose. And then Matt Bradley Shergi kind of chimes in, and then the conversation eventually becomes a back and forth between two listeners, our friend Mr. Lichty, who has chimed in the past, and listener Julius, who is actually from the Netherlands. Thank you for listening all the way from the Netherlands, Julius. And who is also the one who said that Showgirls is probably Paul Verhoeven's masterpiece. Julius's words, not mine. But where the conversation eventually becomes, or the question is eventually raised, like, but was Starship Troopers, was Starship Troopers always intended to be a satire, or did it become retconned to become a satire because it was almost wholesale rejected when it came out, and because Paul Verhoeven and other people who loved the movie or defended the movie saw something in it, and then tried to, like I say, retcon it to kind of be like, well, if we're going to laugh at it, well, of course we're going to laugh at it, but let's laugh at it for these reasons, because, you know, it's, you know, it was always intended to be funny. And Mr. Lichty brings up this idea of guys that he knew who had interviewed Verhoeven, and when Verhoeven was adamant that, you know, yes, Starship Troopers was always supposed to be a satirical, funny movie, and sort of, so by, you know, not that it's wrong to interpret it as satire, but that it's wrong to interpret it as comedy, or at least intentional comedy. And I should also take the time to say that for anyone who's involved in this conversation, I'm sorry if I'm selling your argument short, but I'm paraphrasing and kind of just taking the general bullet points. So once again, if you want to see how this conversation unfolds, it's a very fascinating, insightful one. Also very courteous, which I love, of course, you know, two people who may disagree with each other, but who understand where each other are coming from. Go to this introductory episode and just kind of see it and read it and see how it unfolds. But David Lichty eventually kind of says that, like, you know, satire may be what resulted in it, but that's not what Verhoeven intended it to be. And I told Julius that I would steal the words kind of exactly as he or she wrote them, because they're good points, and I didn't think of them. So rather than, at least in this case, and I found that this was a very insightful thought, I would just kind of read this specifically because I thought this was very insightful. And it just says, let me start by saying I don't really care what Verhoeven thinks he made. What he did make is satire, but that doesn't mean comedy. I don't think the movie tried to be very funny, apart from the obvious parts you mentioned. And I don't think it is, but the fact that some of the epic shots are literally copied from Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will should tell you that that this movie is aware of the evil nature of the society it portrays. To me, Starship Troopers shows the seductiveness of fascism. Everything in the movie is in service of that, including the casting of the soap opera stars, whose performances I don't think are, quote, intentionally bad. They're perfectly suited to what is essentially a Nazi propaganda movie from the future. The fact that the main characters aren't explicitly fascistic is kind of the point, to show that people who share our values, friendship, loyalty, love, can function and live fulfilling lives in a fascist society. That social progress may even continue, the world of the movie seems to have a more progressive attitude towards gender than ours, to show how easy it is to slide into fascism and perhaps to warn the audience. So yeah, Starship Troopers should be taken seriously, but not literally. Which I thought was a very interesting question because, which I thought was a very interesting point. That it should be taken seriously, but you shouldn't judge it on face value. But I think there was also something to be said about this idea that there are some things which are not effective about Starship Troopers, or which hold it back from being a great satire. It's a pretty good satire, but I don't think it is a great one. And I think it does, come down to the fact that I don't want to say that it's tone deaf, but it is a, I don't know, I wasn't nearly as entertained watching this movie this time as I was the last time I watched it, which was years after I watched it as a high school student when I kind of, you know, when the pendulum swung in the opposite direction for me. I was like, no, this is a satire, and all that stuff which is intentionally bad, all the stuff which is bad is done intentionally so. And, you know, everything about this feeds into it, and it's brilliant. And if you question that, you're an idiot. I was of that mindset as well. But then watching it again, I sort of realize, I don't know, this is a thought that I stole from Roger Ebert. Most of my thoughts in this episode I'm stealing from other people. That, you know, sure, it may be a satire, but it's not only is it not very funny, it's not very enjoyable. It's not very entertaining, I think, because since these characters are so bland and they're interchangeable, there's no real reason to get sort of involved in what they're partaking in. You know, I don't give a shit about Rico why do I keep forgetting her name? Carmen. I wanted to call her Carla. I don't care about their relationship, if it succeeds or not. And in fact, it doesn't make sense that their relationship does kind of succeed and come back together. And it makes more sense for Johnny to end up with Dizzy. So if we're going to follow a narrative logic, I think that's the one that it should follow, but that's not what it follows. But one way or another, I don't really care because there is nothing to these characters. There's nothing of substance to them. So it's also like, how am I supposed to be engaged emotionally with this movie? And then it's also like, I'll be honest, I found it kind of a slog. Like, it's 2 hours and 7 minutes, which isn't a super long time, but it felt like kind of a long movie. And I wasn't really enjoying myself because of sort of the repetitive nature of it. Just like, you know, kill, die, retreat, you know, repeat, basically, sort of a thing. And I guess maybe there's something to be said about the deliberateness of that, in the sense of it sort of gets back to this idea of the mindlessness and the mechanical nature of this military complex, I guess. But I just, like, there's no real sense of success or of urgency. I'm not really sure. It's kind of a joyless viewing experience. Like, it's not a whole lot of fun. It just sort of is very laborious and marches forward with these, once again, these bland, interchangeable characters that just sort of make it not really an enjoyable watch. I think it's okay ultimately to kind of, you know, see both sides of the arguments that, like, yes, this is a satire. Obviously, this is a satire because, you know, if it's not a satire, then we have to accept the fact that Paul Verhoeven was casting and saying, like, okay, the only person who can play this part is Casper Van Dien. It's unacceptable if anybody else. And Denise Richards, she was made to play this part. We have to take that seriously, which, considering, you know, the fact that this was a man who made RoboCop, I'm like, I can't accept that's the reality that we're working with here. But then I also think there's something, and this is sure, I'm sure, a thought which maybe not many people have, that there also seems to be something where if he did then sort of cast Casper Van Dien because he is boring and because he is milquetoast, and he cast Denise Richards because she's, you know, going to have the most wide but vapid smile I've probably ever seen in a movie. There's something that's a little mean-spirited about that. You know, casting someone because they don't have great ability to be a fully realized character and fleshed out actor, like there's something that strikes me as a little bit mean-spirited about that. And I don't think Paul Verhoeven is a mean-spirited person by any means, but just in this specific instance, there's something which seems a little cruel about that. If indeed the intention was, let me cast these people because they're not good at what they do, and that will feed into the story that I'm trying to tell. Not saying that's what he tried to do. I'm just saying that if that's the thing, then this satire becomes a little bit, not even biting, but a little bit more cruel on a specific, on a micro level. But then this discussion on the comment fields also raised the question to me, which is a question that I think about all the time, of intent versus interpretation, and how much should that play into the enjoyment of a film? And I don't ask this in a way that I have an answer for it, or in the sense that I'm looking for an answer from you. This is sort of rhetorical, but then also feel free to chime in if you want to. With the example that I thought of long ago when I was in film school was this idea of, like, let's say Ridley Scott is on his deathbed and someone is tending to him, and he kind of calls him over and he's like, oh, by the way, all you guys read way too deeply into Blade Runner and Alien, and then sort of just, like, you know, meets his maker and dies right there. You know, because those are two movies, in Alien and in Blade Runner, which are just pregnant with analysis and film theory. And I mean, you can read books on both of these movies and what they talk about in regards to societal constructs and philosophy. I mean, I once read a book called On Film, which was talking about, different feminist interpretations of each of the Alien movies. Also reading stuff, or, you know, reading postmodernism books and then having them bring up Blade Runner as, like, a shining example of, like, a piece of postmodern art in amongst itself, but a piece of art which depicts a postmodern reality or postmodern future, or a world in which, you know, that is sort of the apex of postmodern ideas, basically. And so those are two movies that, you know, Ridley Scott made, which film critics love them, cinephiles love them, general audiences typically love them, and there's so much analysis and thought that can be pulled from these things in regards to so many different things. What does it say about genre? What does it say about gender? What does it say about philosophy? What does it say about so many things on so many different levels? And everyone's been having conversations, and what if Ridley Scott never intended any of that to happen? And you have to assume, because of how people see these movies as different things and take different things away from it, there's no way any human being could have ever intended any of this, like, all of this stuff to be taken from this one piece of art. In fact, it's very likely that certain interpretations of those films, you know, just came about because of how cultures changed, how intellect changed, how different groups who had different experiences with reality saw this movie and spoke to them in that sort of specific way. So even though Ridley Scott, even if he never intended us to look at Blade Runner as, that postmodernistic piece of art, even if Ridley Scott never intended us to really think too deeply on the fact that Ash is shoving a phallic object down Ripley's throat when he's trying to choke her with a magazine, even if he didn't intend us to read too deeply into that, does that necessarily take away from the film, or should it take something away from the fact, or should it in a way make our analyses of those things less valid? And so that's the interesting conversation that was going on in the comment field, in the sense of, like, listen, Paul Verhoeven may not have intended it to be a satire, but he has made a satire. And I guess the question of, is that valid? Is that invalid? Is it both? I don't know. That's something that's always really fascinated me, because when it comes down to it, I love film criticism. I love reading film criticism. I love listening to film criticism I love engaging in film criticism, in writing that stuff, and obviously making this podcast. But I also accept fully that it is so incredibly subjective. And why I listen to a certain film critic or why I read a certain film critic is because of that person's voice and that person's individual approach and analysis of certain things. There's a reason that I go back to Roger Ebert time and time again on this podcast, because I love his voice. I love what he brings to his analysis of films. I love how there's a casual yet intellectual kind of engagement with the film art form. Sometimes it's frustrating, and I don't get everything out of it that I would have liked. I'm thinking specifically of his review for Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a movie that to this day I still don't care for, and found that that is one of the most subjective reviews I've ever seen from Roger Ebert, at least in the sense of, like, he admits, like, this is what he was looking for going in, and that's what he got, and so for him, it's a successful, entertaining movie. So, having said that, let's say you're going into Starship Troopers expecting a serious movie, or you want a serious movie coming out of it, and instead there's a satirical thing to it. Does that make it not a successful film? Or let's say that, so I guess, like, you're expecting one thing and getting something else. Does that make it any less of a thing, of a piece of art? That's a really interesting conversation, I think, because there are some people who would certainly say that at a certain point that piece of art no longer becomes the director's. Like, once the director or the writers or the filmmakers kind of make it and put it out there, it is no longer their thing. It becomes the thing of the audience, and it becomes the possession almost of those who are consuming it and those who are engaging with it. And in a way, the author's intent kind of doesn't matter, which I'm sure would be blasphemy to the filmmakers of the French New Wave, who, you know, helped proliferate and popularize the auteur theory, in which the director is the, you know, the author of the entire piece. And so just kind of say, like, well, the author may have wanted this, but this is what I'm getting out of it, would seem like it would be the antithesis, and certainly blasphemous. But it's a question that has always fascinated me, and is something which was sort of rekindled within me from watching this, or before watching this movie, but just kind of seeing the conversation that was evolving around this movie, and, like, hey, Paul Verhoeven has said this is what he intended. Like, okay, fine, that doesn't matter, because this is what he has now. And what factors go into that transition? I mean, certainly it was rejected critically and financially when it first came out, and then was eventually maybe reevaluated. Maybe not even reevaluated, but then this sort of repurposed to be something else because of how society was changing and how, you know, politics was changing. The one great thing, not the one great thing, but one of the great things about Starship Troopers is how it does have an evergreen quality, because, you know, I could sit in here in my Brooklyn apartment and watch this movie and kind of think, like, oh, well, this says a whole lot about, you know, the American military. But maybe someone in Britain could say the same thing. Maybe someone in Russia could say the same thing. Maybe someone in any other country of this world besides America could look at that and say, like, this is the approach of my country's military. And really, I think, like, because of that, it just speaks instead to human nature and what the history of human and mankind is. And so it has an evergreen quality about that, because this is always how people are going to be. As much as it pains me to say that, this is always how people are going to be. So whether or not Verhoeven was intending to make something that was serious or intending to make something satirical, he tapped into something which is a truth about human nature and thus made something which is always going to be resonant to people. And so, yeah, I guess in that way it kind of doesn't matter what he was trying to make, because he still, at the end of the day, he made something that was going to be ever relevant, because that's just the nature of human beings, basically. And so I found that interesting. So once again, I say thank you to everybody who chimed in on that comment field. It was absolutely, I made a comment at the end of it, which I said, like, everything about this comment thread is wonderful, which is very terse and interpreted through the lens of the internet, in which it is hard to kind of gauge humor. I meant that genuinely. Like, I love the fact that there was this conversation going on. That's why I do this kind of stuff. And that's why I say people, hey, email me. Or chime in on the comment field. Or leave a message on or a rating on iTunes. Like, I love that dialogue. I love what this can kind of evoke in people. So that was really awesome. But I don't really have much else to say. That's it for Starship Troopers, and that means it's it for Paul Verhoeven, and that means it's it for April. Feel free to reach out to me if you want. That is, you can reach me via email at youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. I want to hear your thoughts about Starship Troopers. I want to hear your thoughts about Paul Verhoeven. I want to hear your thoughts about whether it matters if this is supposed to be a satire or not. Do you think it was supposed to be serious? Do you think it was always supposed to be interpreted as satirical? Does it matter? I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about that. Go to facebook.com/idomoviesbadly so you can see also where, you know, I post the episodes and try and post pictures and articles and everything which might be supplemental and relevant to the things I'm doing. Follow me on Twitter at @NolanFixesTeeth, or don't. You're not really missing much one way or the other. And as I said, you can always already find me at BattleshipRetention.com and back episodes of I Do Movies Badly on iTunes. So that wraps it up for this one. Similar to how it goes, I still don't really have a guest or theme lined up for the month of May. What I may do, just looking at the calendar, I may take next week off just to kind of try and secure something a little bit more firm. Because I think there are like 5 weeks in May, so I have time where I can kind of take off next week and then kick in the first full week of May. No, that is going to be next week, isn't it? Shoot. Well, I might need to take a little bit of time. There may be a break next week, so I can take a little bit of time to try and lock down a guest, which is quite strange that I, you know, because I have a guest for June, and I have July planned out, but I don't have May ready. Which is sort of important because that's kind of next. So it's incredibly uncommon for me to kind of be prepared 3 months ahead of time. And yet that's the situation I find myself in, except for that first month of those 3 months. So we'll see what happens. Got some irons in the fire, as always, to just kind of see what I can work out in terms of availability and scheduling and all that sort of stuff. So, but be sure to stay tuned into the Facebook page. Keep checking back on the I Do Movies Badly Facebook page to see what develops and who is going to be the guest for next week and for next month and what we will be talking about. So be sure to tune in, I guess, to the Facebook page. I can't necessarily say at this point next week, but be sure to tune in next time to I Do Movies Badly, where I will be talking about some new theme with some new person, and well, hopefully I will be just a little bit less ignorant.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.